Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
So are you surprised? You shocked? Confounded as I came over to the dark side and saw Fred's point of view. I have to admit, earlier in the week, I was leaning very much toward Baltimore. I'm not really sure there was one thing that kind of swung me, at least in terms swung me, in terms of the Patriots. I'm guessing that, for the most part, I think my decision to decide that the Patriots will win this one, at least in a relatively close contest, has to do more with kind of what Paul was talking about. I mean, it's home field. The Patriots play very well, obviously, at home in the playoffs. You still have Tom Brady. You have Bill Belichick. The fact that Baltimore doesn't wow me with any particular one thing that they do, especially on the offensive side of the ball, in spite of the fact that I certainly have grave concerns over the Patriots' inability to put pressure on an opposing quarterback, I actually don't think that Ray Rice will gouge them. I think they'll be very, very, I think they'll be very cognizant of the fact that Rice is the guy that could very well hold the key to their success. And if they can just keep, and we talked about this in yesterday's show with Trent Dilfer from ESPN. If the Patriots defense can keep Baltimore's offense from making the big, you know, 15, 20, 25 and beyond yard play, as long as they keep the Ravens between the 20s, then the Patriots can be in pretty good shape. I actually think that we might see a field goal battle, and I think this is where the Patriots have a decided advantage, especially on this field. So having each team score a touchdown, and then basically the Patriots outscore the Ravens 4-1, 4-2, 4-3, you know, on field goals. I think that's a doable proposition. I think it can happen. So you know, I'm going to side right now with somewhere in the 17-14, 17-16, 16-14, 19-17, between 2 and 3 points, which is really why I'm you know, with the spread being such as it is 3.5. I am going to take the Ravens and the 3.5, even though I think the Patriots will win the game. I think they'll win a close one. All right, so let's just open it up right from the get-go, because on a Thursday we normally try to get your predictions, and usually this is very one-sided. Usually on Thursdays when we ask for this, in fact, we haven't really even done it in the last few weeks. Number one, we haven't been around on Thursdays a lot. Number two, because it's predictable. I mean, most everybody's kind of like Fred Kirsch, you know. It's a Patriots victory. Let's move on to the next week. Come on, give me some analysis. Give me some opinion here. Why do you think the Patriots will win, or why do you think the Ravens will win? It could be as simple as turnovers, field position, Ray Rice, Benjamin Watson. Doesn't matter. But what I want to hear is your opinion. So who's going to win the game on Sunday? Will the Patriots be playing next week, the following week? And will we, inside Patriots Playbook, be back here broadcasting next week? Because obviously, if the Patriots do not win, well, then this program goes into off-season hiatus until next September. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. At any rate, that's where we stand. So webradio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482, the telephone number, if you want to contribute to the show. Stash from 98 Rock in Baltimore is going to join us here in just a little bit on the show. He's a talk show host there. He also does some of the pre- and post-game stuff on the Ravens Radio Network in Baltimore. And I didn't get the chance to talk to him the first time we talked to Baltimore because I think I was already on a football road trip myself, but I understand it went pretty well. So we're going to have him come around. If you got some questions for him, in fact, right off the top here. You want to know what's going on in Baltimore. You want to talk a little smack. You want to throw it around a little bit with the guy, then great. Fire off the email, webradio@patriots.com, and we will read them for him if that's the route you'd like to go. But I would suggest you do it now so we can get him in. And then in our 3 o'clock hour, the one and only Russell Baxter, NFL research coordinator for ESPN, he'll join us as he normally does on Thursdays to take a look at the 4 wild card football games that are on the agenda for this weekend. Might even get Russell a chance to predict the Texas-Alabama game. And by the way, obviously everybody, or if you've listened to the show for any length, then you know that, as Fred says, yeah, I suppose I am a bit of a Texas apologist, and I like to have, strippers and I like to go out back and forth at each other and have some fun because he's an OU fan, and, obviously Texas and OU are not exactly on speaking terms. But if you have a thought or an opinion or a prediction as well you'd like to share on the National College Football Championship game tonight, by all means, give it. Strippers, you're not allowed to do this, though. I already know how you feel. So we can kind of move on from that past, from that aspect. But if you'd like to do that, webradio@patriots.com, that's where you get us. All right. On now back to the Ravens and the Patriots on Sunday and the 1 o'clock kickoff here at Gillette. Stash covers the Ravens. He also does a talk show in 98 Rock in Baltimore, and he joins us here in the Playbook. Great to talk to you. How are you today?
John, I'm great, man. I'm in downtown Baltimore. I just came out of a Ravens pep rally where the cheerleaders and Poe, our mascot, and even a guy from IR this year, Ladarius Webb, a cornerback that we missed so dearly, was here signing for the last 2 hours. So the town's getting fired up.
Nice. Now, by the way, I have to admit, just before we get started here, the nickname Poe for the Raven is awesome.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah, well,
I mean, come on. Who wouldn't think of Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven, quote, the Raven Nevermore and all that stuff,
So, well, the Poe House is just around the corner from where I'm sitting right now.
The Poe House. Nice. Nice. All right, so, everybody's getting fired up in Baltimore. Honestly speaking now, when you heard for the first time that the Ravens are going to have to go up against the Patriots again in the first round of the playoffs, what was your initial thought?
My initial thought is I wish it was Cincinnati.
Well, that's being honest, at least.
It is, yeah, because I didn't think the Bengals could beat the Ravens 3 times in one season. But the Patriots, being the wonderful franchise that they are up there and the passionate football team that has gone undefeated this season at home, and the last 3 times, of course, the Patriots did that. They went to the Super Bowl. It was definitely a little bit scary, I think, even for the players. But the players are excited about a chance to go back up and play again because in week 4,
yeah,
John, they were in the game to the very end, and they felt like they could have pulled that game out had it gone their way, and even had Mark Clayton made that catch on 4th down in the red zone. And they're remembering that, and they felt like they were in the game. Since then, they've gone through a lot of ups and downs, games where they've beaten themselves, and some new players have stepped up in place of people that were on the field back in week 4.
I have a feeling that if I were on the Baltimore side and knowing what happened back in October between these 2 games, if I were a Baltimore Raven, there's no question in my mind I'd want another shot at the Patriots. It's very similar to how the Patriots feel about the Indianapolis Colts. They 4th-and-2'd that one away, right? So
right, sure did.
In that instance, then I don't blame Baltimore for feeling this way one bit. I also believe that, as I've already suggested to some of our fans and talked about with the Patriots football writers here, that I think this game has every opportunity to go right down to the end again, just like the one in October did, that most likely it'll be a break or a mistake by either side that will probably decide this, maybe even late in the game, although I don't discourse early turnovers also having a long-term effect. But, I think it could get down to a matter of kickers. And this is where I'm gonna basically side with the Patriots just slightly, only because of Steven Gostkowski here in Gillette. And that really is about the only way that I can break this down in terms of a difference between. I think Baltimore has tremendous strength. I think they have discipline. I think they have poise. I think they've got an outstanding, superior running game overall. I think they have efficient enough wide receivers. They certainly have strength and they have size. I've always loved Todd Heap as a tight end. I think they've got an advantage over the Patriots there. Defensively, with Nada in the middle, with Ray Lewis back there, the only thing that concerns me most about the Ravens is the injury problem and some of the youth that there exists at the corners. It's up to Tom Brady and or Randy Moss and or Julian Edelman to take advantage of that, and that's where the jury's out.
Yeah, well, I can tell you about the special teams. Billy Cundiff missed a couple field goals in Oakland last Sunday.
Right.
And we have a long snapper that has a bad wing. So Matt Catula is snapping high right, and maybe that's part of the reason he missed the two field goals. Sam Cook, or the holder, the punter and the holder, got the ball down. Billy made the kick. They went wide right. But the thing about it is that Matt Catula usually flies under the radar. He's a well-paid long snapper, and he's really solid. But with the bad wing, he was three deep yesterday with cameras and media around him. And he said, look, man, I'm supposed to not be visible to you guys, and here I am.
Wow. Well, so now if he's visible, that should, I think, give at least Ravens fans a little pause just to consider, all right, why is he visible? Because this could, obviously, a lot of people think this could be a key point of the ball game, don't you think?
I absolutely think so. Yeah, because, the thing is, the Ravens, I think, are going to come there and try to run the ball with the three-headed monster that they've developed with Willis McGahee, Ray Rice, and Le'Ron McClain blocking for those two.
Mm-hmm.
And with Willis, and I know you guys saw what he did in Oakland last week, but when he comes to play and he gets it going, 5 yards a carry, Ray Rice 5.3, that's their best attack to get down low. And then the whole idea, of course, is to score in the red zone, and it could come down to that because the Patriots are tough down low.
Right. How much of a factor, Stash, does the fact that the Patriots won, not only in October, but the fact that the Ravens, at least in their short-term period overall, have never beaten New England, how much does that factor into this?
It factors into it a lot, but Harbaugh will tell you, Coach Harbaugh will say, you know, those kind of stats are for people that make predictions, and we don't make predictions, we just play football games. That's the answer that we'll get from our coach here, but I think the players understand that, and the fact that they've never won in Gillette is huge, because they know where the locker room is, and they know how to get to the field, but when it comes time to play football on Sunday, they still have to prove they can win there.
Right, right. All right, X factor then, time. Give me one or two, whatever you can come up with, reasons why you think the Ravens will win.
Well, I think they're going to get back to what they did last year in the playoffs. I think they're going to protect Flacco with keeping people in a little. Maybe Todd Heap stays in and blocks a little bit more. I think they're going to run the ball a lot at first and hope for some play action to come off of that. And if the running game, and they're looking at the Patriots defense, and yeah, the Patriots defense has, if you go pass or rush, a little bit suspect in the running game, they feel like that's the way to attack the Patriots defense. If they can get Ray Rice going and he just disappears in the line and then pops out sometimes and makes some real magic happen, they feel like that's their best attack, and if they can do that, then they can put some points on the board and get up early, because the Ravens haven't been good coming from behind this year. So they need to score early and be on top and then try to protect that lead with their third-ranked defense.
I agree with you about the scoring early. I think that's key here. If the Ravens can get on top, then I think the Patriots will have a tendency to play a little tighter. If the Patriots get on top, I totally agree with you. I think that could be all the difference in the game. So let's flip it to the other side now. Give me one or two things why you think the Ravens could lose the game.
Because they give up. They play cover two sometimes. They give up 10, 12 yards for receivers to be able to get things under. Tom Brady's going to take advantage of that. If they let him have that, he's going to go crazy on it. And that's where drives come from. And the ones that have beaten the Ravens this year, especially late in the game, those drives exist because of that, because they're giving them room, and that area adds up, and teams march down the field. Also, the Ravens have a tendency this year, off and on, of beating themselves. And, man, you wouldn't believe, John, down here, everybody thinks there's this huge conspiracy against the Ravens, and especially when they play New England up there, they feel like there are different rules for Tom Brady, and that he can just, with a hand motion, get a flag. And the football people here know that's not the case. It's a straight-up game, and that if you make penalties, they will be called. And these guys know they have to play within the system and not beat themselves.
You know, that's key, I think, because certainly when you get involved in a playoff situation where emotions are running high and guys really have the adrenaline amped up a bit, and let's say you've got somebody, you know, rushing the quarterback, you've got to know when to pull up. If you don't know when to pull up and you come in with a late hit, it's going to get a flag, and it's going to be a flag no matter what Tom Brady does to try to entice the flag to come. I also believe, and this has long been my theory, Stash, that in the playoffs, you know, the refereeing crews, they get looked at pretty, you know, succinctly as well. They really put under the microscope. So you know they're not going to want to mess up. These guys are supposedly the best of the crews in the league because that's why they're moving on in the playoffs. So because of that, I think they will err on the side of caution. And even if they're not certain that, say, a little grab here or a little push there is a penalty, I think they throw the flag. And I think that's why you have a tendency to not see officials swallow their whistles. I think that's why you have a tendency for things to get chippier in the playoffs because the officials are calling it tighter.
No doubt about it. And I think what you see a lot of times, if you watch the line play, there's a chance to call holding on almost every play.
Sure.
It's how blatant is it? How much does it affect the play sometimes? But you're going to see the Ravens have two defensive players that get held almost every play, at least this season they have. Trevor Price is one of them. Coming through the line, he gets held almost every time. And watch for Antoine Barnes. He's been stepping up as an outside linebacker, and sometimes he lines up as a down lineman on the end, and he takes a wide, hard angle to the quarterback, like a hard edge. It's almost like a hook, and because he's so quick, he runs like a 4.4 40, but he's small. Guys tend to grab onto him and try to pull him down, so he gets a lot of holding calls. And he has stepped up where Suggs on the other side has not had the season that he was hoping to have, and then we've got Jared Johnson, and we've got some rotation going in there on that outside linebacker spot.
Right. Well, this one I think is going to be fun. I don't think there's any doubt about it. All playoff games are great to watch and be a part of. There's good energy in the stadium. Both teams are very much worthy of being there where they are because they've done whatever was required of them to get there, regardless of win-loss records. They're in, and the other teams are sitting home. How much satisfaction deep down here do the Ravens get for just being in the playoffs as opposed to having success in the playoffs? Is there a difference?
Well, there is. It seemed like they weren't going to make the playoffs, and the fans around here feel like they backed in. But the Ravens know how hard they had to fight for every little thing they got this season, and to go out there and then get the win in Oakland and solidify the playoff spot. They came to the locker room after the game at Oakland Alameda County Stadium, Coliseum, and they were all business. They were really like, you know, this is great. They weren't jumping up and down, and the boom boxes weren't blaring, and it wasn't a celebration as much as it was a new beginning. And they know that new season, especially, you know what it is, John? It's Ray Lewis being in the locker room and telling these guys, look, this is how you do it. This is where I've been, and this is how we're going to get there again. And by the way, I don't have a lot of time to get there again.
Right.
So I want to get there.
So if anybody's going to play with a little bit of urgency, it's obviously going to be a guy like Ray. By the way, right now I'm on NFL Network. They're re-showing the October 4th Patriots-Bengals game.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, see, the networks are up on this. I think they anticipate this to be a pretty doggone good game on Sunday, which is probably why they decided to put it in that Sunday 1 o'clock slot, don't you think?
I think so, yeah, I definitely think so. And it is going to be a great game. You know what? The passion of the fans and the vibe at Gillette Stadium, it's as good as it gets. And the fans here know that. And the Ravens, just to beat the Patriots, if you want to go to the Super Bowl, you got to beat the best. And then they know that's what it takes. They're coming up there, and they're feeling like, I think yesterday was the most positive locker room I've seen in a couple of weeks.
In a perfect world, should the Ravens win this game, what's their best matchup thereafter? I mean, obviously the winner of this one's got to go to San Diego. Has there been any talk amongst the fans there in Baltimore about that potential matchup?
Well, not yet. I think the Ravens are scared that...
Actually, I take that back. I take that back.
Because go to Indianapolis.
That's right. They go to Indianapolis. That's right.
Yeah, and that's always been tough for the Ravens, playing Peyton Manning and especially out there at Lucas Oil. So I know they're just excited to go take... They'll tell you they're taking this one game at a time. They're not going to look anywhere past what's going to happen this Sunday, and they're preparing pretty hard. In fact, they were trying some things out. They were outside getting ready for it's not quite as cold here, obviously, as it's going to be in Foxborough. But
right.
They were outside yesterday, and they had a lot of crowd noise piped in and some things going on that just to get them ready. Some of the younger guys that maybe the rookies that haven't seen the playoffs and the vibe it's going to be.
You feel like that's a big factor? Is that something that may be being emphasized by the veterans in the locker room?
Absolutely. I think, well, They played on the road, you know, 8 games already this season, so they feel good. They've been to Gillette. They know how it feels to be there. But at the same time, when it's on the line and you can't hear anything and Flacco's trying to get signals out to people on the sides, and you know, Ray's getting signals in his helmet, and he's trying to position people on defense when Flacco's trying to pick up reads and blitzes and things. It's all so important, and you know, they're just trying to get their mindset right to go up there and take care of business.
All right, final question then for you: what has surprised you most about the Ravens and their performance this year, either in a positive or a negative sense? But what has been kind of a head-scratcher for you?
That they didn't use LaRon McClain to run the ball more. He's been primarily a blocker. He made the Pro Bowl as the fullback for the AFC, but last year he had 10 touchdowns, and he was just a monster and a beast running through the line. Now, just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen him again a little bit more, but they really weren't using him much. And the head-scratcher to me has been the confusing offensive strategy, which seems to change every week, and not just because of their opponent or the matchups. It just seems like players are rising up one week, and then the next week they're completely silent or they disappear. And the penalties the Ravens have incurred this year have been unbelievable, too. That's something that never happened before. But on the positive side, Ray Rice, just this kid, I mean, you look at him, he looks like, I call him my son, because he's 22 years old. And he's unbelievable when he gets loose and gets a little space.
Yeah.
And he can shake and jive. And now, you know, Willis complimenting that when he can come in certain situations, it makes for a pretty powerful running game. And I'm surprised in a couple of ways that you know, that they've been able to bring people along and step in on certain occasions where people have gone down. You know, didn't get the use of Samari Roll this year. Fabian Washington went down. So then you bring in Ladarius Webb, who is the third cornerback option there, and he played lights out until he got hurt. And, in fact, he was just here with us here at this he's on IR. He was here signing things at this pep rally here in Baltimore just a little while ago. But he was wrapping people up really nice, tackling really well. But altogether, I think it's been a positive season. The fans here like to pick things apart like they do everywhere, but I think the Ravens had to scratch a claw to get there. And it's 12 teams. It's a new season.
How many people were at the pep rally, would you say?
God, at least 1,000. It was in the ground floor of a high-rise here where the bank – that sponsors the Ravens, M&T Bank, was throwing this thing. And it was the whole ground floor of about a 35-floor high-rise. So all in all, in about 2 hours, we had about 1,000 people come through. Plus, we were giving things away.
Nice.
You know, footballs autographed, all kinds of stuff.
Was the band there?
No, the band wasn't there.
Oh, love the band. Love the band.
That's a great band, isn't it?
It is awesome.
Yeah, that's a great story and a great band.
Absolutely. Well, Stash, certainly appreciate the time today. Thanks. I know you've got your own gig to get off to here in a bit, but best of luck. Maybe not for this Sunday, but best of luck anyway. Come on, we got to be honest here. Hey,
Absolutely.
Hey, Daddy needs a paycheck next week. We need to keep working, so that's the way it works.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you what. Everybody here is talking about Brady rules, and we'll see what happens out on the field on Sunday. We'll try to play a clean game and. Everybody's coming. It's the mighty men, the 53, and they need all 53 to do it here.
There you go. Thanks, Stash. Appreciate the time.
John, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, Stash from 98 Rock in Baltimore. He hosts their pre- and post-game coverage on their Ravens radio network and also does a drive-time afternoon show on 98 Rock in Baltimore as well. So, actually, he was a little tame, didn't you think, Doc? He was a little tame.
He was a little tame. I thought you would have... Riled him up a little bit.
I tried to, you know, a little emotion, a little enthusiasm, but I thought he wasn't biting.
When he told me that he was coming back from the pep rally, I figured he would have come on and given us the good old Howard Dean.
Yeah. No, I don't think he was biting. I think he was trying to be civil, which is fine. You know, that's okay. Yeah, well. Wonder how much they will struggle this weekend. You never know. You never know. Come on. Find it.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Thank you.
Yeah! Yeah!
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Joe
Willie making an appearance here inside the playbook.
Yeah!
Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. It's time for you now to make your opinions known. You need to come through and tell me who will win, why they'll win, predict the score, even if you think it's going to happen on the other side. Even if you think Baltimore is going to end it all, tell me what you think will be the deal maker or breaker. And if you are all Patriots all the time, like of course we are here, then that's fine too if you're a Pats fan. Let me know what you think will happen and why you think it will happen that way. Come on, it's time for you to take over the show now. Webradio@patriots.com. We'll get to some emails coming up right inside the playbook.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of 3 flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
This would be good fired up music for tonight. I need to put this on my stereo at home about 8 o'clock. This is here and rock this for about 30 minutes so I can work myself into an absolute frenzy before the 8:37 kickoff. Don't you think? You got something for me there? You going to call it up? Okay. Segway. Yeah! I think I'll invite Brandon Merriweather over. What do you say, boy? Let's go.
State. State. State.
That's right, baby. Well, you know, city could be Austin, Texas, too, right? That's right. Oh, goodness. Welcome back inside the playbook. Yeah, I'm a mess today. What can I say? Strippers knows I'm a fan. Absolutely. Big fan. That's the way it is. When you go to school, you know, in an institution that has a chance to, you know, do something big and grab all the headlines and spotlight, it's an exciting time. I have an old friend who is actually going to go to the game tonight. He's got seats in the end zone there at the Rose Bowl. He lives out in Santa Monica. We were college buddies as well, and we've stayed in touch over the years. And he sent me an email the other day, and he said, I actually found end zone seats. Found end zone seats, and he paid $402 for his end zone seat tonight at the Rose Bowl. And I congratulated him first and foremost on being able to get tickets. And I said, why 402? Why not 400? 402? Where'd the $2 come from? Is that like a ticket surcharge or something? He's like, I don't know. It's just what it cost. So, hey, he's going to do the tailgating. They left. Let's see. What time is it right now? It is 2:40. 11:40. So they're just now arriving. They said they were going to get there for the Rose Bowl grounds and start tailgating at approximately 11:30 their time. And that's about what it is right now. So I assume now he's probably already quaffed his first beverage of choice. And the game is, what, a 5:30 kickoff time in California. Matt from Oregon is on the line. Matt, you're in the playbook.
How's it going, John?
Great, Matt. How's it going with you?
Good, good. I got to be honest. I haven't listened to your show quite as much as the PFW guys, but I do say you do a great job.
Thank you.
Listen, I want to bring up. I know we're moving on to Baltimore now and everything, but there's just a part of this whole debate about resting guys and not resting guys that I haven't really heard anybody mention yet, and it's been driving me nuts. So I wanted to just get it out there and get it off my chest.
Shoot.
They talk about, you shouldn't play guys because there's a risk of them getting the injury, and we saw it happen with Welker and all that. But, and then everybody says that the Welker injury was this freak thing that could have happened anytime, anywhere, because he didn't actually get hit. But the thing that the other side of resting guys is giving them the chance to recover from just the day-to-day stress of being a football player, of getting them just some basic recovery time. And I'm totally convinced that that led to what happened to Welker's knee, it's just fatigue. That led into that.
That there might be something to that, but I would tell you that, if you've been around football long enough, the inexplicable can happen. And he clearly, while the turf was sloppy, and obviously the Patriots complained about it, I mean, we can't forget that, a number of years ago, Bill Belichick was accused of, slickering down the field when he was the coach of Cleveland. So, I mean, what goes around comes around. I'm a firm believer in that, by the way. Okay? I do believe that karma and the universe have a way of balancing things out. So, not to say that this was repercussions for what he did back in Cleveland. I'm just saying that it happens in football. Sometimes the inexplicable happens. He planted, his knee buckled. It's that simple. Now, I don't know that any extra...
But wouldn't you think that, his knee buckling, maybe things in his, legs, in his knees were a little bit fatigued from 16 weeks of going hard all the time?
Nope, not at all. Not at all.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so because, these guys spend a lot of time. Keep in mind now, these guys spend a lot of time during the course of the week doing strength work and doing, fitness work and staying, in shape and all that kind of stuff. So the muscles are pretty resilient. And I think most doctors and most therapists and such like that, weight trainers, strength trainers will tell you that muscles bounce back.
I'm a personal trainer. I understand that.
Okay, good. Well, then I just don't know that you can definitively say that, he had muscle fatigue, therefore that led to him tearing his ACL and his MCL. I really don't think either of the things are related. I think football happens, and when football happens, then you just, it's inexplicable. You throw your hands up and you say, dang, I mean, you could understand it a little bit better if he took a hit on the knee, kind of like Brady did thanks to Marcus Pollard, right? But it didn't happen that way. He planted. The ground gave, therefore his knee gave. I know this from a personal standpoint myself because I tore up my knee similarly. This was many years ago. But I was playing basketball, and I was playing on one of those old tartan surface floors, the old rubberized floors. And I came down with a rebound, and my heel caught a soft spot on the floor. And when I turned to make the outlet pass, my knee did not turn with my body.
Right.
And
I understand. I mean, these freak things happen,
It was a freak thing.
Yeah, but I don't know. I can't shake the fact that, had he had a little time to, rest and recover from exercise breaks you down. You need to rest and recover. And like you said, they do all this strength work. It takes recovery time for that to do what it needs to do to make you stronger.
Well, these guys do spend an inordinate amount of time, though, Matt, in the off season preparing for the rigors of a 16-game regular season. That's why the NFL now is a year-round job, whereas, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, some of these guys actually still held, believe it or not, off-season jobs because the salary level wasn't where it is now, where these guys are all like, millionaires. Not all of them are millionaires, but you get the point here. I mean, now, because to get a job in this league, you must be ready at all times. There is no more working yourself into shape during training camp. These guys do it year-round. Now, I know that the coaches feel like, you know, all right, let's just keep them sharp, but then let's pull them back a little bit so they can have fresher legs. I don't know that fresh legs as opposed to dead legs has anything more to do with injury possibilities or not. I really don't know that.
I mean, why do they have a bye week? Why does every team get a bye week at some point in the season?
In an effort to rest people so they can basically be fresh. That is correct.
Yeah.
So your point is well taken. I just don't know that we can definitively say, geez, if Welker had rested, you know, at some point then earlier in the year, then this wouldn't have happened to him.
I hear everybody talk about, you know, the risk of injury, and they're talking about somebody getting hit, you know, and getting hurt. And I feel like if the game didn't mean that much, you know, and I said it before the game, I said, if the game doesn't mean that much, why not get these guys fresh for the playoffs? Why not give them the chance to
fully
recover and come in flying high?
So then you would have advocated doing what the Bengals did, which is basically lie down?
Well, yeah.
Well, but what is that? Wait a second. Hold on, man, because this is a great question. All right, this is a great question, and I'm glad I got you engaged in this because I really want to find out what you think here. Doesn't that deal, if a team lies down in order to save themselves, doesn't that directly affect the integrity of the game?
Well, yes, it does. But
well, then that's why guys play.
Yeah, I know, and you're never going to get an athlete to go easy. They want to play.
Of course
all
not.
The time, and I understand that. But at the same time, you know, I mean, the reason that I keep hearing, you know, Belichick gave and everybody gave about, you know, wanting to play hard in that game was momentum. You know, you want to get your momentum and keep the momentum from winning three in a row and everything. Well, how's your momentum now? You know, you lost the game and you lost probably the most valuable guy on the team next to Brady.
Well, I don't think that they felt like that game was overall important enough for momentum's sake. Obviously, you know, in hindsight, they would have probably pulled him and not played him at all. But
right.
Going in, you don't know that. You don't have the ability to have 20/20 hindsight. I mean,
I know.
So look, football players play football. That's the bottom line.
Oh yeah.
And you know,
why there's coaches.
Well, you know, coaches are paid to make these decisions. Most of the time, you know, the successful coaches make the right decisions. You can argue.
Yeah. And I've always been a in Bill we trust kind of guy, but I cannot get on board with that decision.
Well, okay, and I think that's fair. My guess is that if he had it to do over again, he'd probably change it too. You know, if he'd known the result was going to be the same, especially. But you really can't do that. And like I said, football players play football, coaches coach football, and you just got to play with. See, here's the other thing, and the coaches would tell you that this is probably more important than anything else, and that is that your team should be good enough to overcome any loss that you have.
Absolutely.
It's all about the team. One guy, this whole team is only as good as number 53 on the roster, okay?
Right.
So Bill Belichick would tell you, he says, well, I think I'd like to give more credit to our team here. And while losing West certainly hurts, we have the players that can pick up the slack, and that's what these guys have to do. They have to answer the call. Now I'm calling them. So now they have to answer the call, and they have to go out there, and they have to produce. If they don't produce, guess what happens in the offseason? They go find somebody that can produce.
Yeah.
So
all this being said, I still like our chances this weekend, but I don't know how long they can carry that.
Well, but you know what, though? It's a week at a time, brother, you know?
Right.
You don't look ahead in the playoffs. You can't afford to. This is a one-week, one game at a time. I mean, it's very cliche-ish. It's very trite. It's well-worn. But, man, does it really go this way in pro football playoffs? So
that's an attitude that, you know, has brought the Patriots in particular a lot of success.
Absolutely. So why should we defer from that particular go-around when we know what has worked well here in Foxborough? We know what's worked. These guys have learned how to put blinders on from week to week, maybe better than any other franchise, any other team in recent history.
Yeah, really.
Because that's why they're considered largely the team of the aughts here, you know? Because, they've won three Super Bowls, and they participated in a fourth Super Bowl, and they had a 16-0 regular season. So these guys, I think, are kind of playing with house money here a little bit. Now, the guys, they want to win. There's no question they want to win. So does Baltimore, so does Indy, so does everybody else that's involved in the playoffs. But these guys know what it takes to win. The leaders that are in that locker room, still remaining in that locker room. And so I think everybody else is going to look to them to kind of set the tempo and set the philosophy, and they're going to, you know, be very businesslike about it. And we'll see how it goes. You know, if Baltimore wins the game, Baltimore will win this game on Sunday based on what I think they did as opposed to what the Patriots don't do. I would be very surprised. I'd be one of the most surprised people, not only around these parts, but maybe anywhere, if the Patriots lose this game. And by that I mean if they shoot themselves in the foot.
If they lose it themselves. Yeah.
Right. I will be surprised.
I
really will be surprised, and I think most Pats fans will as well. And ultimately, that's one of the reasons why I came over to the Patriots side and agreed with Fred, even though I was leaning towards Baltimore earlier in the week. You know, I've decided, no, I just can't pick against them at home.
Yeah.
I can't do it. What are they, 8-0 here at the stadium or something, whatever? So, I mean, you know, I just could not do it even without Welker. Now, it'd be a slam dunk if they had Welker. But I think Edelman would be able to pick up the slack a little bit. And the real key for me is going to be Kevin Faulk on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. He's my favorite all-time Patriot. I'm definitely counting on him.
Well, Faulk has got he's going to end up having to be that safety valve, and I think they will seek him out and probably even diagram a few plays for him. So, wouldn't surprise me in the least.
He's the guy, when you need it, he will come through. You know, he's Mr. Clutch.
Yep.
That's what I love about him.
Yep, totally agree with that.
Yep.
All right, Matt.
All right, well, thanks, John.
Thanks. I appreciate the phone call.
All right, thanks. Take care.
You got it. Matt from Oregon, and now you, 508-543-7482. You can jump on if you like. Let me get the Patriots practice report out of the way today. Dan Connolly was the only player that was not visible at the start of practice at approximately what was it, 12-something or other today, 12:30, 12 o'clock, 12 noon, somewhere in that vicinity. He was the only player that was not spotted at the start of the practice. So for what it's worth, that was really no change from yesterday when it was both he and Welker, and obviously Welker was put on IR yesterday. That will hurt depth-wise. That will hurt in the offensive line depth-wise. He also, as you probably will recall, has played on a couple of instances short yardage fullback in the offensive backfield. So don't be surprised to see the Patriots maybe make another move if he can't go and maybe call somebody up from the practice squad to have somebody available perhaps to fill a like role. Or you'll see Benjamin Watson perhaps lined up back there as well and trying to run a little interference fullback-wise. So don't be surprised if you see that. John in Dallas is on the line. John, welcome inside the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's happening?
All right. I posed this question to the PFW guys. I just wanted to get your take on it.
Go.
So Brady, you know, Brady talked a lot about how Welker's injury might give them kind of a, you know, somewhat unpredictable offense that Baltimore would be hard to kind of scheme against.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that going to come from? Because I honestly have no clue.
Where's what going to come from again?
This unpredictability that Brady talked about, is it the reliance on Faulk? Is it, you know, what is it? Is it seeking out the tight ends? Is it, you know, more?
Well, I think it really
combinations. I mean, what is it exactly?
I think that's it exactly. He's not sure what Baltimore is going to give them, and that, you know, the reliance on Welker's not there, so he has, at least in my thought process here, he has several choices that he'll need to make. In other words, do I find Edelman? Do I check off and go to Faulk out of the backfield? Do I look over the middle and go for the tight end? Is the tight end in blocking? Can he release? Can I throw a safety valve pass to him? I mean, that's certainly unpredictable, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, that's all going to happen in a matter of seconds, right?
Matter of seconds? Yeah, basically about 3 seconds. He's got to decide.
So,
yeah, so that's
what I'm wondering is he doesn't have the – Well, I mean, the O-line's been really, really good this year in terms of protection.
I thought they did a bit well.
You have the extra second and a half to make all those checks.
Well, then that will help. But, you know, certainly he didn't have to worry about having that extra time for checks because, let's face it, Welker was his binky, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have Welker. Therein lies the unpredictability. Now, my guess is, and we talked a little bit about this earlier in the week, but my guess is that one of the things that he's worked on this week in practice of course, we're not privy to this because the media is kicked out at about that time. But my guess is he's really worked on one-on-one relationship and signals and just, you know, basically head games, if you will, with Edelman. He needs to have trust in Julian Edelman that if I'm going to if the play calls for, you know, the first check down is to me to find you over the middle, you know, damn it, you got to be there. You know, that's what he's looking for. I'm going to throw the ball to a spot. If you're not there, it's a pick. And if you're not there on one of those hot reads, it could be a pick six. So I think we'll find out pretty early. My guess is that early in the game, you'll probably see Brady find Julian Edelman for a couple of reasons. Number one, he wants to increase Edelman's confidence. Number two, he wants to know that Edelman is there, because if Edelman's not there, he needs to know right away that I've got to make an in-game adjustment here and know where I can go to be able to get reliable yardage.
Well, I think Edelman will come through there. I do. I mean, when he's had the opportunity to produce for the offense, he stepped up in a big way.
He has. I have no qualms with what Julian Edelman has done this year. He has gone way above and beyond what anybody should have asked of the kid. The fact that he was playing college quarterback this time a year ago is amazing in and of itself. The fact that he's come back from missing several weeks with a broken left forearm is still amazing in and of itself, and yet he still managed to catch, what, 37 balls this year. So, he's had a tremendous year. He has been a high-impact rookie for this team. He's had as positive an impact as anybody on this team for a first-year player in a long time, maybe short of Gerard Mayo last year.
Yeah, I agree.
What's your
take on the Pats bringing in those couple of receivers for the practice squad this week? I mean, do you think we'll have any chance of seeing them?
Only if they really show something in practice. I don't think that they make any sort of moves one way or the other. I think the Patriots will go with the guys that brought them here, unless there's an injury. Or unless somehow somebody does something so phenomenal, which is highly unlikely, that it forces them to, make a call on that and activate one of those guys or both of them and inactivate others. No, I don't think they'll have an impact at all.
Yeah, I don't either. And they just elevated, what's his name from the practice squad, linebacker. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Do you know anything about him?
Hang on, I got it here. Hold on.
Williams, maybe?
Yes, that's it. Williams. It's Thomas Williams. They actually promoted him to the active roster to replace Welker.
All right, has he played before? I mean, obviously he's played, but has he played?
He was. All I know is that he was a rookie last year. Yeah. I think with Jacksonville. So I don't know how much he's played. To be honest with you, hardly any at all. I would imagine.
Do you project this? Do you think this guy will play on Sunday as a special teamer, or is he going to see him on defense at all?
I would say you'd have to put that one in the same category as those receivers. He could play special teams. It's possible, because somebody has to get called up. Now that he's on the active roster, my guess is that that's exactly where you'll see him, if you see him at all.
Yep, my feeling here too. All right, John.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. John in Dallas, 508-543-7482. Let's see what we got email-wise. Do you want a break? Okay. All right, we'll take a break here. Coming up here in between five and ten minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN. He'll join us to look over the wild card weekend. Got a lot of emails to get to here. We're going to get to them. So if you have your prediction on the Patriots game with the Ravens, and even on the national championship game tonight between Texas and Alabama, fire it off. Webradio@patriots.com. We'll get to some of those coming up in the playbook in just a moment.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players, or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass., and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information, or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about... samba dancing in Rio back on Monday. Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
As we roll on here in hour number two of the Patriots Playbook for a Thursday, Pats and Bengals come up. I was just looking at something that said Bengals up on the TV set. Ravens on Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff here at Gillette. Got this little item from ESPN earlier. They did some research where they took a look at all of the 32 teams in the NFL for this year, and they lined up the strength of schedule based on the opponent's 2009 record. You want to know who had the toughest schedule overall in the entire National Football League? Is it Russell's on the line? Okay, I bet this guy can answer the question.
Run 9, Russell is on the line.
Yes, Russell is on the line.
Breaker run 9, I got a Smokey on my tail.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I think you sent me this stat because I'm trying to remember where I got it. Toughest schedule in the 2009 season during the regular season belonged to?
I know. I don't have it in front of me and so on, but I don't know if I sent that to you or not, but I think we did send it out.
Okay. There was a tie for first. Does that help jog your memory?
No, I know. I've got it down to 32 teams.
All right. Houston and Tennessee.
Oh, no, that's not for 2009. I believe that's for 2010.
Oh, this is for next year you're talking about?
Next year.
Really?
Nice job, John.
Okay. Well, no. Wait a second. Because it says here, based on the opponent's 09 record. That's what
right,
I was looking
but that's,
at.
Yeah, based on their record, which you know how these schedules work.
Right. So that means, what it means is that based on their record this year, who they played against, they also had the toughest schedule this year.
No. It's based on the opponent's win-loss records of this past year.
Right.
The Houston Texans and the Tennessee Titans have next year's toughest schedules.
Based on this year's win-loss. But going through the year this year, though, doesn't it mean that, you know, I mean, those wins and losses don't change?
Let me see. No, because that's based on the 2010 opponents, not the 2009 opponents.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Because
it doesn't
say they play different teams.
All right, so this list doesn't say that. That's why. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So this is based on what your schedule calls for next year.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
But you know how accurate that'll be.
Well, the Patriots come in on this list then, that next year they will have the sixth toughest schedule.
Well, if you remember last year, the eight toughest schedules belonged to all the teams in the AFC East and the NFC South.
Right.
Okay? Because they all played each other.
Right.
You know, the schedule is done on a rotating basis now. It's so different. You know, as we well know, going back to 2008, going into the season, the easiest schedule in the league belonged to the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
The toughest schedule belonged to the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And since the Steelers were not, they were canceled out of the BCS, they managed to win the Super Bowl with that quote-unquote toughest schedule going into the year.
Right, right.
Never really turns out, but while we're talking here, because I know I did this just recently, I'll tell you, I believe going into last season, Miami played the toughest schedule going in.
I think, yeah.
Season.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Now, coming out, they were, let's see, any ding-dings?
coming out of last season?
Yeah, coming out.
Going into this year?
As it turned out, they wound up playing the toughest, which is very, very rare.
Wow.
So
that really makes what they did last year more remarkable, really, right, when you look
and
at it.
And who played the easiest schedule this past year? And it rarely turns out this way. As it turned out, the Saints played the easiest schedule in the league.
How about that?
Combined, based on their approach. Now, is that why they made the playoffs? I don't think so. I don't think it really works like that. I mean, although it's worth pointing out that the, quote-unquote, the teams who played the sixth easiest schedule, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, made the playoffs
mm-hmm.
and so on. The team with the toughest schedule to make the playoffs, like I said, after the fact, was Baltimore at a 5-23, followed by the Jets and followed by the Patriots, who, ironically, their opponents this past year were identical, 132-124.
Right.
So, I mean, schedule, you know how it works in a schedule. I mean, little is affected by the schedule because it's now with the rotating basis. You really only play two games all year or this season, which are affected by the win-loss records slotting-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we already knew going into this year who everybody was going to play except for the first-place teams of the divisions you don't play.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the New England's opponents in front of me. I believe next year they play interconference-wise.
They play NFC
North.
North, yes.
Right. Okay. So they were going to get Minnesota, Green Bay, Chicago, and Detroit.
Correct.
And just like 8 years ago, it'll be because we're now at the beginning, back end of the rotation process again, starting all over again from 2002. So
yeah, here's
I believe they played. Did they play Minnesota and Green Bay at home this year?
They will play Minnesota and Green Bay at home next year.
Right, which is what they did 8 years ago.
Right, okay, that's correct.
Right.
So Minnesota and Green Bay at home, and then they will be at Chicago and at Detroit.
Right, and I'm trying to remember, the division that they play in its entirety in the AFC is?
That would be the AFC
North?
North again, yes.
Okay.
There's Bengals, Ravens, Steelers,
right.
Which Browns.
Which means, because they were finished first place, they have Indy and San Diego on their schedule again.
That is correct.
One at home and one away.
And they have Indy.
They're only slotting for two games now. It used to be slotting for everything.
Right.
Except the interconference. Now it's slotting for two games.
Right. They have Indy at home and San Diego away next year.
Are they getting Indy home for a change? It's been a while.
Yeah, yeah, it has been.
That's been a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just like other divisions will play, for instance, Cincinnati will play the AFC East in its entirety. So they'll have a home and away with two of the teams and home and away with the other two teams.
Mm-hmm.
The AFC North, I think, plays the NFC South. And because Cincinnati won the division, they will have the Colts on their schedule, either home or away, and the Chargers on their schedule, home or away.
Right.
So it's all, like I said, it's all done rotating basis now. And it's more dumb luck a lot of times, Sean, that you get a tough or easy schedule, again, only by the numbers. I mean, as we well know, in this league where you, what is it, whatever, 14 years in a row that five different playoff teams minimum?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, how can you really tell who's going to be, unless you schedule St. Leo's every, you know.
Like John Thompson used to
be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's always my running joke. St. Leo's or some other team. I mean, you don't do the schedule yourself. So, but this is very. It's always very odd for it to not come out the almost the same way it went in, and so on. But I mean, for instance, you look at Arizona, who I think in 2010 plays the easiest schedule in the league.
They do.
Okay.
Yep.
I wonder why that is. Well, since it's based on opponents' records, you can chalk up 2 wins and 30 losses to the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
And you can chalk up 10 wins and 22 losses to the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
So right there is their combined opponents next year is 114 and 142.
That's incredible.
52 of that is the Rams and the Seahawks.
How about that, huh?
Which means the rest of their schedule is actually 10 games over 500.
Yeah, pretty tough.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. It's all
it's deceptive.
It's factual.
Yeah. But it's factual, but it's deceptive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but there you are. Never messed up the chance to send some information.
So. That's what I love about you, Russell.
Yes.
That's what I love.
And a good way to kill the first 10 minutes of your show.
That's not what I'm trying to do here. Well, I just thought.
I like talking about it because people sometimes get so wrapped up and not. I hear all the time, they got a fourth place schedule. Well, as you know, John, long time ago in the 70s and 80s when it used to be different, a fifth-place schedule actually meant a fifth-place schedule because in the teams – first off, it only pertained to divisions that had five teams, which did not mean the AFC Central and the NFC West.
Right.
So you would play home – say New England in a long time ago finished last in the East and Seattle finished last in the West.
Right.
They actually would play home and home against each other even though they weren't in the division.
Mm-hmm.
So you well know that because that actually happened.
Because
that, I believe that was the year they played the home and home the year in '93.
Sounds like
because
it.
Because one of them had the first pick, which was Bledsoe, and the other had the second pick, which was Meyer.
Yeah, that's right.
So
right, good revisionist history.
Yes, yes. It just shows that I'm as I talked to a friend of mine today, shows I'm old hyphen er. Not old, but old hyphen her.
Yeah. All right. So. Well, let's take a look at these wild card games then. We'll start off in the NFC. And you mentioned the Cardinals and the fact that they'll have the easiest record in the NFL next year. The Cardinals obviously look to be banged up a little bit. I guess there's some questions about Anquan Boldin. And the Packers were, I think, a lot of people's, you know, they were the chic pick, I think, for a Super Bowl spot before this year even started.
Yeah, I know one chic person who picked them. So
would that be you?
That would be me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no read to back off now. But it's nice to see that they actually are playing their best football the second half of the season. I mean, does anybody remember this team lost to Tampa Bay?
No.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. And if you get down to brass tacks, they are 1 point away or slash one Ben Roethlisberger last second pass away from being 8-0 the second half of the year. They have been playing great football on both sides of the line of scrimmage. The defense is really coming. You know, it's sad to say this, but I think you'll understand what I mean by it. Their defense seemed to gel when Al Harris and Aaron Kampman went down. Now, that is not to knock them as players.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, they made the transition to a 3-4 defense this year with Dom Capers. And I questioned all year moving Aaron Kampman, an excellent Pro Bowl defensive end, to outside linebacker. It's not like he was an undersized end. And then, you know, he's a big guy trying to chase down tight ends and running backs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little tough. It's one thing to be strictly upfield. I mean, there's not a lot. Who's the biggest outside linebacker in the league? Maybe Lamar Woodley? Okay, but a lot of these guys who have played defensive end in college, undersized, make that conversion. But Eric Cameron was already in the steps. Anyway, to get my point is, they seem like they struggled in the system. They now have young players, including Clay Matthews. Clay Matthews, the seventh or eighth. I'm losing count. There's been so many Matthews. What a great lineage,
yeah.
You know, Bruce and Clay. And, of course, now his son who, I don't have the final totals in front of me. If he did get any votes for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
But all those USC linebackers can play. We've seen all four of them. This year, Maiva in Cleveland with some sparks, and of course Cushing, and now Maluga, who of course is hurt now for the Bengals, and Cushing and Matthews, of course Cushing's the defensive rookie of the year.
Right.
But they seem much more comfortable on their skin. Charles Woodson's going to garner some votes for defensive player of the year, not only playing corner but moving him around in that defense. They seem like they're clicking on all cylinders, and Aaron Rodgers is playing lights out football. It's ironic that you want to take the Packers on the road because the Cardinals last year were dreadful on the road and great at home for the most part. But they've been always so-so at home.
4-4 at home this year.
Yeah, and again, throw out what happened last week. I mean, I think this is going to be tougher, but this is going to be a very physical. I think it's going to be high-scoring, big plays offensively and defensively. But since I picked the Packers, I'm going to stick with them. I like the momentum they've created. And by the way, kudos to Arizona. I mean, the Cardinals have not been in the playoffs back-to-back since 1974 and 1975.
I was about to say, would that be the Jim Hart years?
Yeah, the Jim Hart years winning the NFC East when they were in the NFC East.
Right.
You know, for all the knocks on, well, the Super Bowl jinx, you lose the Super Bowl, you don't make it back to the playoffs. They made it back to the playoffs and actually had a better record by one game than they did last year. So Ken Whisenhunt, who is 3-for-3, he's not had a losing season there. He's 8-8, 9-7, 10-6. So at this pace, he will be undefeated in 6 years. But the bottom line is this is an incredibly respectable program. Kurt Warner, always big in the playoffs, you know that. Twice as many touchdowns, 26 to interceptions, 13. But I just think Green Bay gets it done and continues the momentum they build up the second half of the year.
Jim Hart, Roger Worley years.
Absolutely. And it's the original Mel Gray.
Yeah.
And the little Terry Metcalf and
right.
the little Jim
That's
Otis.
Right. That's right.
And Conrad Dobler, Dan Dierdorf, you know, take your pick. I mean, they were.
Jackie
and
Smith.
And Don Coryell pulling the strings.
Jackie Smith?
Yep.
Yep. Wow.
At the tail end of Jackie Smith, I believe.
Well, but he was on those. Yeah. He moved to the Cowboys.
Even though he was there, then he did, and then he made his last year with the Cowboys in 78.
Yeah, and we all remember.
But, I mean, they were, listen, that. Now we're used to teams throwing the football all over the place.
Yeah.
They were a poor man's AFL team.
They really were.
The way they played in the mid-70s.
And I think that's a lot of reason why they had such success back then is because they really sort of embraced that whole wide-open AFL mm-hmm. atmosphere back then. So.
Well, listen, Don Coryell on offense, I mean, he can't get more synonymous than that.
We're digressing, of course, though, aren't we?
No, we're just old hyphen.
I have to use that phrase again. That's pretty good. All right, so Packers and the Cardinals, that's the 4:40 Eastern time game coming up. Let's on Sunday. Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern time, the primetime game Saturday night. By the way, it's so weird to have all these rematches back-to-back like that. It's just bizarre. And, of course, obviously Ravens and Patriots are a rematch from earlier in the season. So generally speaking, in rematch situations, does the team that wins the first time, do they usually win the second time?
Well, I think if you're talking about the rematches from just the previous week, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that as well as, you know, the overall picture as well.
I think it's kind of even, Steven. I mean, I think the previous week one, it's happened 13 times before, and I want to say the team that won the first game is it's like 5-8.
Okay.
But here's the problem with that stat. You got to take a closer look at what the situations were. I mean, think about it. I mean, Dallas and Philly both played because they had something to play. I actually heard somebody on the radio, I can't remember who it was, who actually insinuated that Philly laid down for Dallas, which, I mean, I'm trying to still get the feather out of my throat on that laugh.
No shot that happened.
That's got to be as
no shot
statement as I've ever heard in my life.
No shot. That might be an impossibility.
Right. I mean, they just don't like each other to begin with, much less laying down. I mean, I think the Cardinals obviously pulled people very early. And Cincinnati, and you get mixed opinions on what happened there. But, I mean, other things that have happened recently, like, what was it, 2004, the Colts, I think Peyton Manning played one or two series, and then they squeaked by the Broncos like 49-24 the following week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all different instances. And it actually goes back to, like, the 40s and the 50s in championship games. You know, when you didn't play as many games and you actually played teams much more often in the season, even though they weren't in your division or so on.
Right.
But in any case, you know, this immediate thing, it's just odd. I mean, like I said, 13 times previously, now 3 times in one season. But I actually thought you were going, well, maybe you know better. I thought you were going to actually lay on me the, Russell, it's so tough to beat a team 3 times.
No, not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that because I don't believe it.
I don't believe it. You know, I said this to Trey Wingo a couple of days ago, name dropping as I do.
Nice job.
How come a team like New England and San Diego can beat Buffalo and Oakland 13 times in a row, but you can't beat a team 3 times in one season?
That's a little bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, I don't understand. But because you play them 3 times in a season, well, what happens if you play them the last game of the year?
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs, and then the first game of the season. That's 3 times in less than a calendar year.
That's true.
Well, you shouldn't be able to beat them 3 times in a row. It doesn't add. And just so you know, so we're referencing fact. If you go back to the merger in 1970, and actually happened before then, but we won't get into all that, 19 times the team has swept the team during the regular season and played them in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
12 of the 19 times the team won the third game.
How about that?
Okay.
How about
so
that?
Happened in the AFL, happened in the 40s and 50s when teams played each other 3 times in a season, then maybe in the playoffs, or even back long, long ago in a galaxy far away, even older people than us
mm-hmm.
watch games where teams played each other 3 times in a regular season.
Right.
But it's never the idea you can sweep the team 3 times in one season is not that far-fetched. So can Dallas do it again? Absolutely. Will they do it again? Well, I say yes. So I think the Dallas Cowboys are playing lights-out football right now.
I do, too.
And it's really the defense that has opened people's eyes. And I think, you know, one aspect I don't think people talk about, first off, the pass rush has been great. They're getting a great balance. Tony Romo, who I know gets vilified for everything he does, and, John, you're a big Cowboys observer, so you'll know this.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Romo has not fumbled the football in seven games.
Well, that certainly flies in the face of some of the misfortune that he's had
earlier
in his career.
He this year played all 16 games, and in the 4 years that he's been the primary starter, he would set a career low for fumbles. He only fumbled the football six times all year, which is a low amount for a quarterback. Cut down the interceptions, thrown for 300 yards for the last 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing terrific football, but again, the defense. And I'm going to point out two guys on the defense, besides the veteran, DeMarcus Ware, we know about. Keith Brookings brought great leadership. A couple of former first-round picks have really stepped up in the last month or so. One would be Anthony Spencer, the outside linebacker, former first-round pick for Purdue, had a big game when they derailed the Saints' undefeated season. And Mike Jenkins, last year's co-first-round pick with Felix Jones. Everybody talked about Felix Jones and his speed. Jenkins has really emerged as a good corner. They're getting contributions from a lot of different places. This isn't a one-man show anymore. And listen, I know Wade Phillips has not won a playoff game, but a lot of the Dallas pseudos have bitten the dust the last couple of weeks. So much for the bad record in December. So much for not winning a big game. They now go into the playoffs, the hottest team in the NFC, winners of three in a row. And along the way, in the last couple of weeks, ended the Saints' 13-game winning streak. It just ended the Eagles' 6-game winning streak. And by the way, it's almost like it gets forgotten. They shut out the Philadelphia Eagles last week. Shut them out. Okay?
Yes, they did.
That's one of the highest-scoring teams in the league.
How much do you think, though, that might have been Philadelphia just not showing them stuff?
Well, listen, they were showing themselves early. I mean, the Eagles win that game, they're the second seed.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So they don't have to play this week, obviously.
Right, exactly. So I don't think there's anything. Listen, you can say as much as you want about Green Bay, Arizona, Cincinnati, and Jets, and so on. There's no such thing as not showing anything to a division opponent because they know you inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's the case at all. Now, can Philadelphia win the game? I'm not saying they can't. That's not my point. But I think there's – And I guess until they do it, because they haven't won a playoff game since 1996.
Right.
But again, it seems like you remember the year Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl. We heard for years that they couldn't win the he couldn't win the big game. He couldn't beat Florida. He couldn't win the playoffs. And then he wiped it out all in 1 year. By the way, in a postseason where he threw more interceptions than touchdowns.
Wow, okay? I had forgotten that actually.
Yeah, I mean people forget. And listen, I'm jumping out of my realm here, and I know I'm talking to a Boston market, but didn't A-Rod finally put it all together in baseball?
Yeah, he finally did.
And finally, so, you know, listen, everyone, sometimes it never ends. Sometimes it starts to end. The Cowboys look like they're on a pick. They look like a confident football team. And I'll throw it out now. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Packers-Cowboys in the NFC Championship game.
Really? Wow. That would be great. I'd love that. Talking about being older, that would be awesome.
Yes, it'd be Packers. It'd be great.
Awesome.
It'd be Packers, Cowboys, the Ice Bowl.
The Ice Bowl, yeah. 1967 all over again.
Yeah, in a retractable dome stadium.
Yeah, well, that'll stink. That'll stink. I've never been a huge fan of domes anyway, so that's just me.
It would actually be, because instead of the Ice Bowl, we would call it the Ice Cube Tray Bowl, wouldn't we?
I guess we'd have to. Yeah, thank you very much. Be here all week.
I'll be here for 10 minutes.
That's right. Okay, Jets-Bengals, Saturday afternoon, 4:30 Eastern time. The Bengals, they laid down. There's just no other way, really, two ways to put it. But I'm wondering how much of an effect their pulling back, let's say, against the Jets last week has on their preparations for this week.
This is the mental game. And I'm not trying to repeat myself, but I think you hit it right on the head. What did we see from the Bengals? How much getting beat that badly, regardless of what the effort was, and who knows what the effort was? Carson Palmer was 1 of 11 for 1 yard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his line score looked like a comb, and it was rough to watch. That was the game was rough to watch. Now, it's at Cincinnati. Bengals have played better there. Cedric Benson will be back this week. They got it. You know, Jets have a great running game, number one in the league. Bengals running game much improved. But I'm leaning toward the Bengals here, and I know what I see what the Jets did last week. But the Jets at times have been their own worst enemies, giving up two kickoff returns to Teddy Ginn and a loss at home. special teams woes and kicking game woes, losing to Atlanta at home not too long ago. But I will throw out these numbers about the Jets' defense. 47 points allowed in the last six games.
That's pretty good.
14 takeaways, 14 sacks.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's 8 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
They have really turned it on, regardless of who they're playing. Some of the opponents, of course, iffy. But the only game they lost, of course, was 10-7 to Atlanta. But, I mean, they're getting after people. That offensive line is firing as well. I think the Jets should win the game. I don't know if they will win the game. And it'll be really interesting to me to see how Mark Sanchez fares in this game, if they opt to let him do a little more. Because I don't think they can really go into Cincinnati and do the exact same thing as they did last week. They're going to have to change it up.
Yeah.
And one thing about I will say about the Bengals as well, great year. Marvin Lewis, to me, gets my vote for Coach of the Year because of everything they've overcome. If they do decide to put the ball in the air, that would be the Jets. Jonathan Joseph and Leon Hall might be the most underrated cornerback duo in the league. And I know it was hard for one or both to get to the Pro Bowl because when you got Nnamdi Asamoah and Terrell Revis,
right,
it's tough to wedge somebody in there. But that's a very prideful Cincinnati team who, by the way, won a division and got no one named to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I know. I was going to just ask you.
It's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, does that mean that's the reason they're going to win? No. But
how much of an effect, though, does it have on this team?
I think if you play the respect card the right way, it works. But I think what Marvin Lewis will be battling all week, and I'm sure he has, is the difference between confidence and overconfidence. And, what I mean by overconfidence, it's the Jets' overconfidence. I mean, everything points toward the Jets. And this is a team that's not had an enormous amount of playoff success lately or any time lately, okay? They've had some playoff wins, okay? They haven't been to a championship game in 11 years. Of course, Cincinnati hasn't won a playoff game since 1990, okay, which was the game where Bo Jackson – I'm sorry, not the week before Bo Jackson got hurt when they lost to the Raiders, but they beat the Houston Oilers in 1990 in the first-round playoffs, the last time they won a playoff game. But I think they're a different football team at home, and I'm kind of leaning toward them and so on. I think the Jets have had a great year, but they've been a little too erratic for me at times. Cincinnati looks like it's fading, and yet they're as physical, I think, in a lot of regards as the Jets are.
Okay. You still like the Bengals slightly, though?
Yeah, I still like the Bengals slightly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and that brings us then full circle. We got the Ravens and the Pats, rematch of an October 4th matchup that the Patriots had to hang on and win 27-21. Obviously Wes Welker is not around for this one after suffering the knee injury last week in the game at Houston. I think most Patriots fans feel like Julian Edelman is at least an adequate replacement, although I would argue that, you know, it's not going to be just Edelman that replaces Welker. It's also going to have to be Kevin Faulk and the tight ends and anybody else they want to throw to out of the backfield. Question is can Baltimore, I think, put enough pressure on Tom Brady to make those, you know, secondary receivers have to stay back and block rather than catch footballs from Brady? I think that will have everything to do with whether or not Baltimore wins the football game.
You know, it's funny, John, and be it with Wes Welker or not Wes Welker, but just the eye test with the Patriots this year. I think a lot of people expected that they would be the Patriots of 2007, and obviously that hasn't materialized.
Right.
But we also have fond memories of the Baltimore Ravens, and for some reason, it's been a long time since they won that Super Bowl, and we seem to think that that's still the Raven defense from 2000. So what I'm saying is neither one of these teams are what everybody thought they were or used to be. Okay. I think the whole key to the game as far as Julian Edelman replacing Wes Welker is I have no doubt that Julian Edelman can catch 15 passes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what does Julian Edelman do with the football after he catches it? And that's where Wes Welker is as good as anyone in the league. That ability to matriculate its way down the field. His run after the catch is outstanding. That's why he's as good a punt returner as he is.
Right.
And that's where the keys are going to be. Is Julian Edelman going to be 10 catches for 95 yards, or is he going to be Wes Welker and have 8 catches for 147? Okay, that's
right.
Where I think the keys be. And if Edelman is tying up one side of the field or tying up the middle of the field, That's where Randy Moss has to hang on to balls. That's where Ben Watson has to come in. I think they're going to try to make up for the yards after catch deficit with Kevin Faulk because he's as clutch a player as there is.
Correct.
But, I mean, Baltimore's pass defense, I think, leaves a lot to be desired. They didn't really get tested last week. They gave up a lot of big plays at Pittsburgh. They gave up their share of big plays at Green Bay. Early this year in a win, they gave up over 400 yards to Phillip Rivers. Again, no Welker, and they'll do it maybe a different way, but I have to like New England's chances playing at home. And the Ravens, to me, the Ravens just been a very inconsistent football team. And one other thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about this on our own Sunday shows, Baltimore makes a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
115 penalties this year, which tied for the third most, and I say accepted penalties. But something that someone pointed out to me here, which was even I never noticed, but it's not a stat I look at a ton. 1,074 yards worth of penalties for the Baltimore Ravens this year.
That's a lot of penalties.
That's the highest number of penalty yards in the league. You know, when they played earlier this year, I think the defense was flagged for 5 penalties. Two roughing the passers, and including, I believe, an unsportsmanlike call on the Baltimore bench that cost them 15 yards. I don't know if that was Red Auerbach or Tommy Heinsohn who dropped down, but very frustrated Ravens team. And, of course, you know, to me, the big play in that game was Mark Clayton dropping the fourth down pass when Baltimore was driving late in the game.
Right.
There were a lot of those instances for the Ravens here. Missed field goals, touchdowns getting called back. Not as John Harbaugh's done a great job with them in 2 years, but they weren't as tightened up this year as they were a year ago. And when it comes to being tightened up, no more efficient ship in this league than the New England Patriots, and I'm leaning toward them.
All right. Well, I think most fans would probably agree with you, and I'm sure a lot of fans that like to listen to what you have to say week to week probably are silently rejoicing on that one. You know, I would agree that I think the Patriots just be very, very tough to beat at home. It would probably take another injury or two, probably some key players for the Patriots not to have at least more than a little bit more than a legitimate shot to win the game. I think they can overcome the loss of Welker. Whether they were able to do that after this point, should they win on Sunday, is an entirely different story. And I would assume that you know, if we have the opportunity, we'll talk about that at another time. Before I let you go, what do you think about the national title game tonight?
Well, the country loves Alabama, so I'm kind of leaning toward Texas.
naysayer.
No, it's not so much naysayer. It's not that. Listen, Alabama's extremely physical.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. I don't think it's anything against Alabama. I'm more of a balanced offense type of person, and Texas presents a little more balance, I think, offensively. I mean, Mark Ingram, the Heisman Trophy winner, they obviously barrel over people. I mean, I've watched Alabama at times the last couple of years. They're as physical a football team as you're going to get. But there's just something about Texas and Colt McCoy, and he's not the whole team. And I know they had a really rough time of it against Nebraska in that title game. I mean, the Domagan Sue, we're going to be talking about him when we do this show next year, obviously.
No question.
Texas has been in this spot before. Mac Brown's been in this spot before. They were never supposed to beat USC a couple of years ago. I think he runs a very quietly confident program, and I could just get the feeling that Colt McCoy is going to cap his career, and I believe this is the last game of his career. I don't think Colt McCoy is done after this, or he is done after this.
Right.
With a national championship. Again, that's not to be contrarian. I think it's more of a style. It's a personal style thing. I like balanced football. And listen, Alabama put a whipping on Florida a couple weeks ago.
Sure did.
Obviously, their confidence is sky high. But I think, you know, Florida, I think Colt McCoy presents different problems than, say, a Tim Tebow. You know, Tim Tebow, if you're like playing a fullback who plays quarterback,
mm-hmm.
Colt McCoy, I think, is more of a standard passer. Again, I'm not the biggest college football observer in the world. But I, based on balance alone, I'm kind of leaning toward Texas. Does Alabama have the better defense? Yes. But I know that if Colt McCoy has the ball and it's 10-7 late in the game, I'm kind of leaning. I like the Texas' chances in that game.
Okay. Well, from your mouth to God's ears.
We shall see.
Absolutely.
Listen, is there any NBA game you want me to chime in on?
No. I realize that might be a bit
like
of a stretch.
Kind of like the Clippers last night upset the Lakers. Yeah. Oh, they did.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, it has been, obviously, our pleasure to have you, you know, on the program again. And, obviously, if the Patriots survive this week, then we'll buzz you next week and see if we can't run through the divisional playoffs. But if, by some chance, this is it, I just want you to know that having your expertise and your knowledge and your willingness to share it with us, you've had a nice little cult following grow here in Patriots Nation. I think you should be aware of that, so it's all appreciated.
Well, feel free to drop me a line anytime they want. I mean, I always love to hear from some people who share my passion for football. And the best thing about this is if the Patriots do win next week, I get to hear that glowing report all over again.
Yes, you do.
Next week, hopefully. We'll see.
That's absolutely right.
John, I thoroughly enjoy doing the show. You and your staff do a great job. It's a lot of fun. Again, I love talking football. And there are very few venues to give it the opportunity like this one does.
Thank you. Well, believe me, we will definitely take advantage of your good graces, and we'll hope to talk again next week.
You got it.
Talk to you soon. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN and the entire ESPN family of networks. And just pick one. They're out there. Did you hear that ESPN is going to have an ESPN 3D channel now? Did you see that? ESPN 3D?
So there was also a report that came out yesterday that a bunch of TVs are actually producing the technology to be able to watch it now.
Does it mean that, you know,
one of the premium channels is doing a 3D also, I thought I read.
Or does it mean we're going to get nothing but cheerleader competitions on ESPN 3D now?
One can hope.
I suppose. All right, let's squeeze in one more timeout, and then it's emails, you, your thoughts. Who's going to win the game on Sunday? If you got some predictions for the national title game in college football tonight, fire them off. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Speak now or forever hold that tongue of yours.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Yeah, don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Yeah! How about that, strippers? Who's playing tonight, baby? Who's playing tonight? Not OU. Oh, who? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I was just going to say, somewhere strippers just turned off his feed.
No question. Goodbye. See you later. All right. Well, hey, you know.
I can't say anything. We got lunch on the line here.
That's right. That's true. I do not ever do anything wagering-wise with Texas, ever. I just feel like, you know, it's too much of a jinx. So if they lose tonight and I lose the bet, it's because I placed the bet. Period.
And we get lunch on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, from me. Instead of him, which is the way it should be.
And you'll have to come in and do the show on Tuesday.
That's true. No, I won't come in. I'll come in and have lunch with you guys. But I'll protest. I'll put tape across my mouth.
Just do a Scalavino and sit there with your arms folded and your headset hanging on the microphone.
Basically. All right, let's get some of these emails in here, shall we? Here we go. Mensa from the Bronx has an interesting take here. He says, I think we should begin to forget this season and try to focus for next season. How do you guys think of the Patriots trying to take a shot at Brandon Marshall of the Broncos? I hope I don't hear your excuses about his attitude. Have you guys forgotten about the running back who came here for the Bengals and performed and behaved beyond expectation? Would you agree with me that Bill has never been the same coach after Spygate? Let us be really realistic and honest here. I'm not even sure how to answer that. No, I don't think they should forget this season and focus on next year. Brandon Marshall is a tremendous athletic talent, but he's also got a nickel head. What else? Spygate? I don't think it's affected Bill Belichick one iota. No, I really don't. Just being honest here. All right. Well, let's see what else we got here in the bag. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, Dale from Bedford. If you really want to compare this coming game with the October game, please consider what Welker did in the October game. 10 times targeted. He caught 6 passes for 48 yards. There were 2 other receivers with 50 or more. If Sunday's games turned out the same as October's, couldn't the Pats get the same production with Edelman this time? I'm not sure how much coverage Welker was drawing away from Moss on October the 4th. Maybe you guys know. Well, he's drawn some coverage, I think, away from Moss, but, you know, not entirely. He would certainly have drawn more attention this time around. This won't help a bit against San Diego, where a red-hot Welker would have been essential. I don't see how the Pats will win next week, but they should be pretty sorry if they don't win on Sunday. I get a sneaking feeling that a lot of Patriots fans feel like you do, Dale, that they expect to win Sunday, but they're not counting on anything for the following week, should they get there. You know what? If they win on Sunday, I guarantee you, 110%, I will guarantee you that right back here in the playbook next week, people are going, hey, we're going to beat San Diego, we're going to play the Colts. You know, it's just, you know, it's fandom. So I really don't pay too much attention to it, or at least I try not to anyway. Connor in Ireland. Hey, John, PFW in Progress was focusing on how easy the Pats offense is to stop. But I put it to you that the Ravens offense is easier to stop. Stop Ray Rice and Derek Mason and you stop the Ravens, right? We are the more talented team on offense. With the cool, level-headed Brady, how can the Patriots lose? Well, I see where you're coming from, Connor. I also think that the X factor in this game on Sunday has to do with Todd Heap, and I've mentioned that, I think, as early as 2 days ago, trying to start, you know, looking at this game, that I think the Ravens would be absolutely foolish not to try to find Todd Heap in the seam somewhere, considering the Patriots have a penchant for giving things up over the middle. Maybe you pound, and then you try to, you know, slice and dice with the receivers and or Todd Heap. So I don't know that the Ravens are that, you know, one-dimensional, but I would say that the Patriots certainly have a big play capability in their palm, more so than what Baltimore has. Doesn't mean that either team is going to be able to pull it off. I just think the Patriots with Brady and Moss have more of a capability. The one thing the Patriots have to guard, as we mentioned again with Trent Dilfer yesterday, was they have to guard Ray Rice from getting the big game, getting that 20, 30, 40-yard run plus, especially a touchdown run. They need to keep him somewhat in check. If he gets 8 to 10 yards every once in a while, okay, so be it. He's got some talent. As Stash from 98 Rock in Baltimore told us earlier in the show today, he has that ability to sort of get in somewhere and then just disappear and all of a sudden pop from out of nowhere. A lot of that is because he's only 5'7", but he certainly is proof that you don't have to be a big guy in stature physically to have effectiveness as a professional running back. I don't know that the Ravens defense is any offense is any easier to stop than the Patriots, but I would say that because the Patriots have a little bit more of a big play capability, it might make your scheming, I don't want to say simplistic because that's not the right word. That's not what I'm looking for. I would just say that you like your matchup a little bit better with the Patriots defense against the Baltimore offense. All right. Moving on. Tim from Chicopee, Mass. I want to start off by saying go Longhorns. I, too, am a diehard Texas fan, and I'm looking forward to seeing Texas beat Alabama tonight. Secondly, I think Edelman will have a great game on Sunday. I'm predicting 11 catches for 110 yards with a 45-plus yard touchdown reception that he caught over the middle. Breaks a tackle. Busts loose for a big touchdown. All right, Tim. I also think that if Edelman turns out to be the great player that I think he would be, I'd be delighted to see Welker packaged in a trade for a good pass rusher. Whoa! Wait a second here. What? Are you nuts? First of all, who's going to take him as damaged goods? Second of all, who's to say that he's not going to be able to rehab and come back to being at least close to what he was? If you're the Patriots, wouldn't you rather still have that?
He says, I think that's... I don't know. It's kind of gay.
I don't know that I'd call it that, but nevertheless. He says Texas over Alabama 31-28, New England over Baltimore 24-14, with a last-minute touchdown for the Patriots. It's pretty close to actually the score that my son picked for Texas-Alabama. He's at 31-27, and that's kind of what I've been going with, although I've tended lately to sort of skew downward in favor of the defenses. I think it's going to come down to more about 23-20, somewhere in that range. Okay, Dave. I'm not sure where Dave is writing from, but he says, John, you have a great show and you're a great host. Thank you. Let me tell you why the Pats will win. This game is being played at the Razor. The Ravens are as bad on the road as the Patriots are good at home. This is not a game where Wes Welker's loss is the backbreaker. The Patriots have played the Ravens twice with Wes Welker on the team, and his stats are 2007, 3 receptions for 18 yards, 2009, 6 receptions for 48 yards. This game will come down to our offensive line. If the O-line can get a push in the running game where our backs can get about 3 yards per carry and pick up the blitz, that'll give Brady the time to wait for his receivers to get to the point of their roots where they will be open on a terrible secondary. But this game is over. Patriots move on. I'm not too worried about our defense. Flacco isn't having a good year. I know Belichick will take away Ray Rice, their only weapon. Honestly, I'm not worried about this game at all. Dave is speaking with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm and optimism. George from South Carolina. A quick take on the game. The record against Baltimore, an undefeated record at home aside, the Patriots defense already matches up against Baltimore already considering. The Ravens' strength lies in the run game, the tight end position, and their number one receiver. Remind you of any teams we've played or play quite a bit? San Diego, Colts, Falcons, Baltimore, Jets. All those teams' weapons lie in the same areas. So Bill and our defense are already fairly familiar with the concepts we need to implement. You know what? That's a very good point, George. I'm going to give you credit. I think that's the first time I've heard that this week. The major reason, he says, we should be able to do this is that those other teams, Rivers, Ryan, and Manning, the lesser quarterbacks being Flacco and Sanchez. Not week two Sanchez, but the he is who we thought he was Sanchez from game two. In fact, Flacco's ineffectiveness or effectiveness last year really came from the defensive front Baltimore ran that kept getting him starting field position in his own territory. Honestly, does anyone think Flacco is performing at a level that he can move the ball for 70 to 80 yard drives? As far as tonight, Alabama 17-13 look for their multiple fronts to give McCoy just enough trouble. Fair enough, George. Good analysis. Good thorough analysis. This one comes from our friend Jim in Florida. John is a 40-plus year Patriots fan. I do not take any satisfaction in picking against the Pats. With the Pats having gone 8-0 at Gillette in the regular season, I have at least a modicum of confidence that Brady and company can make it 9-0 at Gillette.
It is another Patriot!
But the reason I am picking the Ravens is that the percentages are with the running game of Baltimore and their run defense, whereas the Pats will have to win this with their passing game. And that is a lot more iffy, weather factors, Ravens pass rush, tip to drop pass, and a crucial point of the game.
I think Edelman will make plays, even if not quite as many or as productive as would have occurred with Welker in there, but I'm not confident of his durability. Ty Warren will be back, but he's not 100%, so that might be a problem with Rice and McGahee pounding the ball. And Flacco is effective enough to find whichever receiver draws Will Height in coverage. And I use the word coverage charitably. Woo-hoo! Sharp. If Belichick does, he's done so effectively in the past, taking away what the other team does best. And if he and Bill O'Brien can game plan to utilize the offensive weapons, Falk, Watson, Baker, rather than simply plug in Edelman and use the same game plan, and if Belichick can somehow figure out a defensive scheme that will not expose Will Height to giving up big plays, the Pats can very well win the game in a squeaker. And as a lifelong Pats fan, I will be rooting hard for that Pats to win and advance. A lot of ifs, though. As a realist, I'd just being a homer if I predicted the Pats will win this one based on the team's consistently lackluster second-half offensive protection. Or production, he says, and defensive fourth quarter meltdowns. But he does sign it, go Pats, Jim in Florida. Well, Jim, I'm a little shocked. That's almost as if Fred Kirsch said, you know, I think the Ravens are going to win.
Did you see his score?
No, what did he say?
It's in the subject line, Ravens 17, Patriots 13.
Yeah, I didn't even see it. Yeah, Ravens 17, Patriots 13. All right, very good. Thank you, Jim. I'm a little surprised. Tim says, try to finish this sentence. Notwithstanding what happens 2 years from now, the Richard Seymour trade will only be justified if... Okay, this is good. I like this game. All right, let me read that again, and then I'm going to give you the four choices. Oh, boy, I love games. Try to finish this sentence. Notwithstanding what happens 2 years from now, the Richard Seymour trade will only be justified if A, the Patriots beat the Ravens, B, the Patriots beat the Chargers, C, the Patriots go to the Super Bowl. D, the Patriots win the Super Bowl. Well, if I'm going to be true to what I've said all year long on this show, for those of you that have, you know, been with us from early in the year, then the only answer for me is D, the Patriots win the Super Bowl. I really believed back in September, and I believe it still to this day, maybe I'm being a hardhead about it, but I believe to this day that giving up Richard Seymour cost the Patriots a legitimate shot at the Super Bowl. So if the Patriots can get to the Super Bowl and win it, I'd be happy to perform mea culpa to everyone who wants to listen. But if they don't win the Super Bowl, I have feeling like, you know, this is a veteran component that staying here and providing leadership, you know, injuries notwithstanding, could have certainly helped this team go further. I mean, you have to like Richard Seymour in there right now against, you know, a physical team like Baltimore, wouldn't you? All right, good stuff. Tim in Baltimore. Alejandro from Bogota. Hello, John. It's been a week, but it's never too late to wish you a nice 2010 to you and your family. Thank you, Alejandro. Same to you. As a member of the ever-growing Rook Nation. God, that sounds bizarre, doesn't it?
I could see the T-shirts already.
Rook Nation? God.
It's better than the other nation that they had in Boston, right?
My family
Ted Nation?
Yeah. Ugh. My family would puke, though. They just would. They're like, what are you talking about? Get out of it. Get over yourself. He says, I wish to have the playbook up until the Super Bowl, even if the Patriots are eliminated. There's your first vote, Jason. I could be a weekly feature on Thursdays with Russell Baxter. Oh, see, now he wants a job. So that's why he wants to hear this show until the Super Bowl. Says, if you can't make it to the show, you can throw in Eric or Brian Lowe, a.k.a. the Curtis Painter of web radio. I'm liking this already. It's prediction day, so I'm throwing my score. Patriots 17, Ravens 13. Pats jump to an early lead and clinch it with a fourth-quarter Gostkowski field goal. Alejandro, always good to hear from you. You know what? You'll have to do us a favor. You'll have to make sure now that you're a regular contributor to the show if, of course, the Patriots win this Sunday. So when we come back with the show next week, you know, we can kind of audition you here. So not only with email, but, you know, hey, see if you can, you know, if you're in Bogota, I mean, I don't know what the phone call costs, but, you know, what the heck, right? Okay, Adam. First, a quick question about some of the guys playing tonight in the national championship. Any idea if Rolando McClain has declared for the draft? I'd love to see that guy playing next to Mayo to start the 2011 season. I have no idea. Nobody's declared for the draft yet. They wouldn't be able to, because if they did, then they risk their eligibility to play college ball immediately. So there's no way that he would do that. I don't even know, is McLean a senior or is he a junior? I actually don't know that. Jason's going to find out for me. Also, anyone else from either team that you would like to see in a Pats uniform in the next 2 years? Absolutely. I said this way back in September. I'd love to see Jordan Shipley. Wouldn't Shipley look good? He's a junior. Okay, so McLean is a junior. Okay, I tended to think so, but I don't want to misspeak until I had the facts in front of me. Jordan Shipley, to me, wouldn't he look good right now as a replacement for Wes Welker? He's got speed to burn. He could line up as your two receiver. He's also, I think, a perfect slot guy because he's got that missability kind of thing going for him that Welker has. Plus, you know the Patriots need some help in the kick return game, right? Seems like it's been flotsam and jetsam back returning kicks this year. So I'd love to see Shipley. I'd be thrilled. It has nothing to do with him being, you know, Texas Longhorn. It has everything to do with his talents and what I think this team could use as a wideout and as in the kick return game. And Shipley's got both of them. Shipley would be a great third receiver for the Patriots as well as a kick returner. Now, you know, keep in mind, now Welker's not going to come back for most of next year, if at all. So Patriots will probably be in the market free agency to find themselves a second receiver. But I think getting Shipley in as a third would be a great thing. All right, he says, on to the Pats game. As Belichick seems to preach a lot, special teams is a third of the game and I think could play a big part. Starting field position, as with any game, will have a lot to say about who wins this game. Also, as you said, Gostkowski will have a chance to put much-needed points on the board for us. And also, when given the chance, we have to put up a touchdown when we can get inside the red zone. We can attribute a few of our losses this year to not putting up the six when we should have, be it a fumble inside the five or an interception or whatever. Also, the D's ability to hold Baltimore to three inside the red zone will be big. I say Pats win 24-17. Thanks for reading my emails and love the show. All right, Adam. You're right on about the red zone stuff. Patriots have to convert. And at the very least, if they get field goals, they got to make sure they're holding Baltimore to field goals, if not less. Nathan from Southern California. Hey, John, I'm thinking that for the Ravens to beat the Pats, they bait us into stopping the run and throw the ball downfield. I'm terrified that the Pats might give up bigger plays if the ball is thrown down the field and they might carve up our secondary like a Thanksgiving turkey. However, on the flip side, in theory, with Welker out, this may force Tom Brady to do something with the ball he's never done before. Throw to the tight ends. If Brady gets too pass happy to the double-covered Moss, then I predict we won't convert on third down and we'll lose. If his favorite receiver is whoever is open, including the tight ends as well as slot receiver, wide receiver, etc., then I think we control the offensive plays, keep Baltimore off the field, and we win, and I'm hoping we can catch some fire. What do you think, John? Nathan, I think you're spot on. I've said that all week long. The tight ends are going to be big in this game, and Brady's got to find them, and the game plan has to make them available. Now, unless they're just overly worried about the pass rush, you've got to find a way to release one or two of those guys, you know, because Baker and Watson have been used a lot for blocking, as we all know. You got to find a way to release one or two of those guys to be a safety valve and get the ball to him. We talked about this earlier in the show today. On the hot reads especially, if you don't have the confidence in Edelman to be where he is, Falk and the tight ends are going to come up huge. They have to come up huge for the Patriots to win the game on Sunday. It's not rocket science here. Tight ends are big and will be big and probably should be big. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. John, I'm just tuning in, so forgive me if you've already talked about this. How does Welker being out affect the punt return? He's a valuable asset to lose in this phase of the game. Who can step up and fill this position? Well, Falk and or Edelman would be my guess. Probably Kevin Falk, because Edelman will be on the field most of the time as the slot receiver. So I'm guessing that Kevin Falk being, you know, primarily a third down back, my guess is Kevin Falk gets the majority of the punt return duties, as he has done. If you'll notice, or if you'll recall at least, in a lot of punt situations when there's a lot of field to cover and a team is punting from deep in their own end, while Wes Welker would have been the deep receiver, there's a short receiver in there as well, and usually it's Kevin Faulk. So my guess is Faulk goes back to doing what he did very well for this team, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and that's be the primary punt returner. So that's probably what happens. And I don't really think, I mean, it's again, it's not going to be easy not having Wes Welker back there. But I also think, though, that I also think that Kevin Faulk is more than adequate as a replacement, as a punt returner. And, you know, like I said, given the situation, if he's just been in the game and he has to come out of the game or for whatever reason, I think you can see Edelman probably back there returning punts as well if need be. All right, Andrew in Sandy, Utah is going to get the final word here on the program. He says, I've been thinking more about the question you posted yesterday, and now that I have given it some more thought, I think that Tom Brady will be the biggest difference maker. Welker going down last week changes the Patriots' play calling a lot. Brady now has the responsibility to get the ball thrown even more accurately to Moss, since he'll be double covered, as well as being responsible for getting the ball distributed well to the rest of the team. Then there's the Ravens' blitz-happy defense, so again, Brady has the responsibility to be prepared mentally to make the right reads and audibles. Finally, it is the playoffs. Everyone knows that the only teams left are all good, and you have to try to eliminate all mistakes possible, and that starts with the quarterback. I think that if Brady can keep his head, make the correct reads, spread the ball around, and not make too many mistakes, I'll take the Patriots at home 24-17. By the way, I don't really like the arrogance of Alabama, so by default I go with the humble McCoy. All right, Andrew. Not the only reason I'm giving him the last word, but certainly a good enough one, right? The participation report out for today, same as yesterday. Dan Connolly did not participate. As we told you earlier, he was the only veteran, the only player out there not to, during the media portion of practice today. Full participation from Brady, Edelman, Green, Kazzer, Springs, Warren, Watson, Wilfork. Full participation from each of those players today. That wraps it up for this edition of Patriots Playbook. I certainly believe that we'll be back next week. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel on Tuesday. In the event that the unthinkable happens, well, I appreciate each and every one of you for contributing to the program and for listening in and being a fan of Patriots.com radio and hopefully in particular of the playbook. And we'll go on off-season hiatus and we'll come back next September. You'll have the PFW guys to kick around during the draft and into the summer months. And then you can kick me around again back when we get to September. But like I said, I don't expect that to happen. I say Pats 19, Ravens 17. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next week, y'all.